Two very different views of the economy. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News, from the two rivals set for a 2024 presidential rematch after this morning's worse-than-expected jobs report that has led to a stock market surge. The Dow's up more than 300 points on investor hopes the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates.
The great American comeback continues, President Biden says, with the latest Labor Department survey finding 175,000 jobs added to the economy last month. In a statement, the president says there is more work to do and he'll fight for hardworking families he grew up with in Scranton, not Park Avenue. A reference to his Republican rival, former President Trump.
That's Fox's Jared Halpern at the White House. At the courthouse in New York, the former president said,
"The numbers are horrible. It's just these people are destroying our country. Here's another sign of it."
Predicting the economy is only going to get worse. He also ranted before going back inside for more testimony at the first Trump criminal trial against the judge's gag order, limiting the former president's comments about the case and witnesses.
"We'll be filing a lawsuit on the constitutionality of it. But if somebody says something about me and I'm not allowed to respond, that's never happened before."
He's already been fined $9,000 and faces more over more alleged gag order violations. More pro-Palestinian encampments cleared in New York City this morning. That's at New York University, from where Fox's Molly Line reports.
The NYPD swiftly clearing the encampment at NYU. A rough wake-up call a little after 6 a.m. for the demonstrators here at this site. Protesters roused from their tents, warned of arrest if they did not leave. The NYPD pretty quick here, very efficient, and cleanup now underway at this site.
Protesters also cleared from tents at the new school nearby. Police in New York City made more than 50 arrests. There have been more than 2,000 arrested in protests and across the country at campuses. America's listening to Fox News.
Living with pain is so difficult, so terrible, that sometimes we often love nothing better than hearing about somebody getting out of it. That's why I want to tell you about Wayne from Kansas and his Relief Factor story. Wayne spent a big part of his younger years playing sports, and as it often happens, it caught up with him eventually. Lower back and foot pain pretty much dominated his life until he decided to give Relief Factor a try. And within just a few days, his back pain was gone. A few days after that, goodbye to foot pain as well. Wayne says he's proof positive that Relief Factor works. Wayne, I'm proof positive too. When I started taking Relief Factor to help my own pain, I got my life back. Try Relief Factor. If you're living with daily aches and pain, see how Relief Factor, a daily drug-free supplement, can help you feel and live a better everyday life. To get started, try the Relief Factor 3-week quick start. It's $19.95, comes with a feel better or your money back guarantee. Visit relieffactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800, the number 4.
Broadcasting Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACYuma.com studios. 560 KBLU.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Scott Gross. A welfare check in a quiet Yuma neighborhood near Desert Hills Golf Course turns into a gruesome discovery. Yuma County Sheriff deputies arrived at the home just after 9 o'clock on Wednesday evening for a report of a possible burglary and two missing people. Deputies found the elderly man and woman inside dead. The case is being investigated as a homicide. It remains under investigation at this time. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs signed a bill repealing a 160-year-old abortion ban. The repeal will not take effect until 90 days after the legislative session ends. And the Arizona Wildcats are coming to Yuma for the school's Wildcat Welcome Tour. It'll be at Yuma Golf and Country Club this Monday, May 6th at 5:30. You can meet the athletic director, Desiree Reed-Francois, and other coaches from different athletic programs. Join us on the TV side for News 11 at 5, 6, and 10 every weekday for all of your local news, weather, and sports.
The morning hours are pleasant. It's the afternoons we're running just a little warm, but nothing out of the ordinary for early May. It stays like that today and tomorrow, and then a big cool down takes place by the end of the weekend. Sunny and 93 today, low 60s overnight. A bit breezy at times tomorrow, and warmer, 94, but then Sunday goes the opposite direction. Much colder, 82 the high. I'm meteorologist Terry Smith from the Weather Channel.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr. Wealth Advisor.
Money. Get away. Good morning, Yuma. AM 560 KBLU Money Talk. George Davis Sr. and Tom Rush here with you. We've got the team back together. Russ Clark, you're looking good, Russ, losing weight.
I'm working on it really hard, man.
Yeah, I can tell.
You know what I found out? Eat less.
Yeah, all the things they say to do is say eat less pasta. Yeah,
gotta do.
Hey Tom, I noticed in the opening there they talk about CWM, Carson Wealth Management.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if we really mentioned them enough on the show, but we've been with them for 4 years now. Made the move over to RIA, Registered Investment Advisory Firm, with Carson Wealth, who's based out of Omaha, Nebraska. I saw an article last week in the USA Today that out of the best financial advisory firms, out of 500 of them, they were number 28. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, not bad, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really who we work through in our platform.
It's where we get our fiduciary responsibility and, as our platform goes. So yeah. I'm pretty happy with that number. We've been real happy with them. So it's a great move for us and our clients.
The backstory on why we joined Carson Wealth is when I was at LPL, I started LPL Financial, which is one of the largest independent brokerage companies out there out of San Diego. That was about 2,800 advisors when I started, and when I left, that was about 20,000. So, LPL really grew.
Mm.
But Ron Carson was the top wealth advisor at LPL for like 15 years in a row, or long, for a long time. So he had a coaching program that he did on the side, and he would basically show advisors everything he did for his office, HR, even investment models, anything you could think of. And he had a very open platform. He was out of Omaha. He had a bigger staff. He took on higher net worth clients. Mm-hmm. But anyways, we paid him a monthly advisory fee. So we've been in his coaching program for 20 plus years. But we got a lot out of it, because in this business, they don't really teach you how to run a practice. They just say, here's the keys, here's the car, kind of go for it. So we kind of, everything we did, we kind of mirrored off of him most of the time. But anyways, when he left Carson, and he was like, say he was number one advisor.
Left LPL.
Left LPL to start Carson Wealth. We waited about three and a half, 4 years to see, what would partake. But then we liked what they had to offer, and a lot of it had to go back to what made sense. Mm. And what made sense for the advisor, what made sense for the client. So we jumped on early into 2019, I believe, and we've been with them ever since. So pretty happy with them. They're up to about $35 billion in management. I think when we joined, there was like $20 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So they're growing pretty fast, but the fact that they can win that award means they're doing something right.
Yeah, I agree.
So
they do a good job, great job with the financial planning, which we've been really having a big push in our office too, is to add financial planning. I remember back when you and I went to some of those conferences, and the investment strategies or models they had that Advance and Protect, they only had about four or five of them. And now I think there's 70 plus different strategies. So I really appreciate they're always looking for, ways to diversify and different alternatives as far as the investments go in a changing world like today. So I think they have 10.
Well, to give you an idea, about a month ago, they came out with an AI model, artificial intelligence. Uh-huh. So it's about 35 stocks that they think are going to lead the way. And those stocks can be bought and sold, daily, weekly, monthly. The good thing about these models is advisors are not doing it. And a lot of times at LPL, we were the ones that were saying, okay, let's sell small cap and buy mid cap. So it's kind of putting the ball into our field, which is more time, more stress. So anyways, we think it's a better approach.
Yeah, you and I'd be combing through those mutual funds,
yeah,
deciding what to change. Okay. They also use their platforms are mostly the ETFs, exchange-traded funds, which keep the fees lower for the client. So
I
really like that too.
Well, the other thing that Carson made us do too was drop our Series 7. So the Series 7 or 7 license is a commission base. So it means you buy, you sell, you buy, you sell. You get paid, usually commission in, commission out if it's stock, mutual funds, commission in. So they basically made us manage just with a 65. So we had a 7 and a 65 with LPL. But they said, if you're going to join us, you're going to drop the 7. And the reason why they did that is the 65 is managed more at a fiduciary level. So basically, if I got you as a client and, I said, do this, and I didn't make any money, and then we got out, and then I made money by getting out, and I got you into something else, and I didn't make money. At some point it becomes, and I've done this for now 30 years, sometimes it becomes a clash between, you know, I'm not making money. You're getting paid fees. Like, why am I doing this? Mm. So being an advisory account, you know, we don't take any money up front. There's no money to get out. There's just a quarterly
no cost to make trades.
Annual advisory fee, no cost to trade. But what that allows you to do is also be, you know, more proactive on, you know, if you want to rebalance an account, we're going to move some money. So it's just basically it's a platform that makes it more where the advisor and the client are on the same side of the desk. And we want the account to go up also because there's an annual advisory fee on the account. Or if the account gets beat up, we make less. So really making decisions, I think, that are more in line with, you know, the client. And I'm not saying all advisors aren't in line with the client, but, you know, when there's, you know, many fees, and there's sometimes the fees, you know, you can put people in and they don't even see the fee, but we get paid. So it's just very non-transparent. Mm-hmm. So being fiduciary, having anything above board is very transparent, so we're pretty happy.
Yeah.
So speaking of being pretty happy, about 2.5 years ago, a designation came out called CEPA, which is Certified Exit Planner Advisor.
Okay.
And I read into what it was doing, and I completely bought into it because I think there's a big need talking to business owners. And basically what it is it's a designation where they show people or you can show clients, business owners, how to capitalize out of their business when they're ready to get out of it. And they, you know, when I say get out of it, meaning close the doors, sell it to someone in their family, sell it to another business owner, sell it to someone, sell it to private equity. There's also an ESOP program where you can sell it back to your employees. But basically, they only say about 20 to 25% of businesses will actually capitalize on their business where they get money out of it. So most, that means 75% of businesses eventually just shut the doors.
Yeah.
Now, you might sell equipment in that to get some money out of it, but you're not really selling the true value of the business, which is, you know, how much money you're making, what kind of employees you have, what kind of customer relationships you have. So you can basically work on a plan to get a much better pricing on your business if you have worked with someone on what are the weak spots on the business. You know, because every business is being sold on a multiple. So, for example, one business could be sold between 4 to 10 times on the multiple. So, you know, if you sell at 4 or 5, that's not as much as 6 or 7. So sometimes you're talking hundreds of thousands, if not, you know, $1 million if you can get your multiple higher. But again, a lot of business owners are good at what they do day to day, but one of them isn't trying to figure out how to get the multiple higher. So in a nutshell, that's what I do. And I do work with business owners on this. We're having a seminar on Saturday, this Saturday. I work Saturdays, tomorrow. Just so you know. tomorrow. So it's 10 a.m. to 11 at our office, Human Investment Group. We have a conference room. But we're going to go over basically exit planning and what business owners should know about it and what they should consider. It's going to be very informative, very educational. And then we have another one on Tuesday. We did two dates from 6 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday. So anyways, if we're going to talk about this whole program. And if any business owners are interested in you know, learning more about this, there's no cost, just got to show up. We'd like an RSVP. That way we can get you on the books. Our phone number is 928-329-1700. That's this Saturday at 10 o'clock at our office, or Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. at our office. It's about an hour.
182 East 16th Street. Our number here is 344-5258, 344-KBLU, if you have any questions about what we're discussing today. And we'll probably ready for our first break, Tom, and then we'll get into the nuts and bolts.
Hey, our guy's telling us we've got 5 minutes, so we're going to keep going.
All right, let's do it.
So anyways, you know, when you look at – so why most businesses just shut their doors and don't sell is because they don't have a plan. And a lot of times business owners hang on longer than they should. So as their profit margins go down and, you know, at some point, depends on how long you work in the business, how much time you want to spend, you know, maybe the business isn't doing as well as what it was in the heyday. And some of it is people get older, get tired, don't want to work as hard. So there's a point when you should look at capitalizing your business. We call that a triggering event. And basically it has to be some event that makes you realize, you know, what would happen if I wanted to sell my business. Now, sometimes a triggering event gets kind of thrown at you, like maybe you have a big health problem where you realize, you know, it's better not to own a business, be as stressed out. Maybe there's a divorce. Divorce always causes things to happen that you're not, don't necessarily want to have happen. You know, maybe there's a point where one of your kids or nephews or somebody, you know, is can working with you but wants to actually take over the business. You know, what's a fair price for mm-hmm. them? How would it work? You know, who holds the paper and all that? So, you know, this is a story that you can talk about all day long, but until there's a triggering event where a business owner has the need to explore this area, it's just talk. So what we, you know, what I'm trying to do is just promote the education of what people need to do when that time comes. And there is a process in place that has been well thought out of. There's also even businesses that finance purchases. So it depends on what the numbers look like. If, say you're going to buy the business from your boss and you're like the second in control and you're like, well, I don't have any money, but I know how to run this business. You know, there's ways for you to get financing to cover the boss. So a lot
so
of
like anything else, the best, like you're talking about these triggers, divorce or health, those would be more of an immediate concern where your time frame might be a little bit less, but to plan ahead, hey, I'd like to sell the business by this age. I want to retire. So you have a little bit longer time frame in there where the triggering event is actually allows more time to look into the different scenarios and plan more for it.
Yeah, you really, you know, 1 to 2 year period is probably the optimum time to get your numbers looking better so that you can then get a higher multiple. And sometimes the numbers that get better is, you know, like if I ask you, you know, what's your income bracket, income tax bracket, you know, people say, you know, I made X and say I made $100,000 last year. Well, there's the income bracket and then there's the what did you really make? Because like most business owners, that's subtracting depreciation on equipment or their building. Mm-hmm. Well, that's irrelevant. Even on taxes, if I'm in the top tax bracket as a business owner and then I have, you know, the business income but other incomes, you know, real estate, rentals, so you might not be in my tax bracket. Well, that's another advantage, you know.
Okay.
Take out depreciation, take out maybe some taxes. But ultimately, there and you know, a lot of business owners can and I'm a business owner, but you know, a lot of business owners might put things in there like you know, I don't know, country club membership or you know, you got your family on your cell phone service, stuff that, you know, if you can back those numbers back out, maybe you're making a car payment, you know, for yourself, which is fair. But, you know, as a business owner, you can decide if you want to do that and deduct it off the business. But if someone's going to come in and buy, there are certain items that aren't going to come with it. Like, you know, if you're making a car payment for you and your wife through the business, well, you can back that back out because ultimately, you know, a new owner wouldn't necessarily have to do that.
Yeah.
So that was what you pay in income taxes and what your real taxes are, what your real income is.
Mm.
And that's, believe it or not, it's always two separate numbers. I mean, but if you think about it, you know, a lot of times when business owners, you know, do their taxes, they're trying to take every itemized deduction possible, you know, pay the least amount of tax, which makes 100% sense. But on the flip side, too, if you look to sell your business and you're like, look, I only made $20,000 last year. That could be a quick by looking at that number, you can say, well, you know, that's not a great business. I don't want to buy it. But then if you dig down into the wood, you know, dig down into it, you can realize that maybe the business made $80,000, but there was a lot of things in there that were deducted and such in a reasonable fashion. So that's part of getting in the weeds. A lot of times it involves working with the CPA too, that the business owner has a CPA, you know, those numbers and things that we can look at. But yeah, it's a triggering event. A lot of times a triggering event too is, hey, I'm at a point in my life where, you know, I think I'm ready to do something else. So I don't want to spend 40 hours a week, you know, or 50 hours a week doing what I do. So you're ready just to kind of go to the next chapter. So that's the start of it, triggering an event. But we'll take our first break here. This is Money Talk, 5:60 a.m.
Be sure to listen to 560 KBLU every Friday morning from 8 till 9 a.m. for Money Talk, bringing you the latest information and changes in the world of finance and mortgages. Brought to you by the partnership of Derek Egeberg with Guild Mortgage and Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
This is Derek Egeberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. Tom Rush here, George Davis, Yuma Investment Group. We're talking about exit planning for business owners and how to try to get the most valuation from their business when they sell it.
Yeah, Tom, as you're talking, a couple of things that I come to mind for why would somebody want to hire us, you know, someone like you, a CEPA, Certified Exit Planning Advisor. To me, it takes the emotion away. Because if I'm a business owner and you're talking about valuations and the taxes and how much is the, you know, you have a triggering event, how much is the business worth? As a business owner, and you are a business owner, sometimes you think, oh, my business isn't really worth that much money, or you have a lofty expectation of what it's really worth. But a CEPA or a third party comes in and kind of takes away that emotion and has that outside looking in and saying, well, you know what, this is really what the valuation is, or this is another alternative you could have to maximize, you know, what you get out of it. So.
Yeah, with most business owners, I mean, there's, you know, some efficiencies that can be made better. And to some degree, it's almost like, you know, telling your baby, like, hey, your baby's kind of an ugly baby. You know, your first reaction is to punch somebody, right? But the reality is the emotion is high, whether it's a high valuation or maybe they don't think it's worth as much. And you can, you know, it's a hard conversation to have because really what you're trying to do is get a business in a better fit shape so it can get a higher valuation.
Okay.
Well, after they do all that, they'll listen to you and say, well, man, I'm going to keep it now.
And they can. But it doesn't mean it. So the whole process will be good either way, whether you find a seller and you get the price or you decide, hey, you know what? Maybe I should keep it because, you know, this thing has stepped up, you know, better earnings or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's not, the goal is not always to sell, but the goal is to basically get it to a selling position. Because, you know, a lot of times to get in a selling position is you got to be working at the business to make it better.
Yeah.
And complacency sits in with every business. I don't care who it is. So it's either way, it should be a good thing for the business.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention you're running a business, which keeps you, you know, your time is very valuable. So someone else helping you out and making those decisions.
If you had to jump through the hoops,
do it yourself. Oh.
Yeah, it probably would never happen because there's a lot of, and there's other professionals that I could bring into the circle that might need to come involved. It's very, it's really impossible because this CEPA designation is a, like an association. And I'm the only one in Yuma that has it. I actually just came back from a conference from Florida, and I think Tucson has like 10 people there, and Phoenix probably has more. But it's a system that they evaluated on how to do the process to make it better. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there was millions of time, of hours and time and, you know, thought process. Mm-hmm. So it's just a much easier way to do it than to try to reinvent the wheel. But let me give you a couple of success stories I've had. One of them is one of our clients called one time and said, hey, someone made an offer on my business, and they want to offer me $950,000 for a business. And in the old days, I would have been like, well, that's great. You know, congratulations. What else can I do for you? But in this case, I said, well, let's do this. Let's try to get an evaluation of what your business is worth. And no one's ever done that with them. And we basically, there's different ways to do it. In this program we have, and this is a simple way to do it. It's a starting point, but it's not the end result. But we have a software program that we subscribe to called Biz Equity. So you basically plug in 3 years of tax returns, and it's very line item on the tax return. And again, if the tax return's showing you're making good deductions or making, you know, put a card and the cell phone's on, it's going to be less. But you can back those numbers back out, which we did. We basically plugged it in, and it spit out that the company is worth $1.4
million. Oh.
And basically, it's a little report that, you know, we can print out. And he basically went back to the table, and he ended up getting about $1.2 million on the final. But that was just a quick.
But he sold it.
He sold it. But, you know,
$250,000, yeah.
Yeah, so he was able to look at, you know, $250,000. So that was a big success story. I mean, not knowing, you know, what the business is worth. Another story I had was at another client who came to me and said, hey, I've been propositioned to buy out this other business in town. And they're competitors with a little bit of overlap, but, you know, they're competitors. And, you know, I think I'm overpaying for it. And I go, well, you know, not to get the details, I said, look, well, if you can get me 3 years of their tax returns, like, I can feed it into this program, and at least it'll give us a starting point. And to make a long story short, the business wanted $250,000 for this business, and we plugged it into the report, and they said it was worth $1 million. I mean, so I told him, I said, don't ask too many questions, and don't try to negotiate down too much. Just, you know, but the point being is, again, business owners, you know, kind of pull a number out of the hat and say, hey, here's what I think it's worth, whether it's too high a number or too low. But there is a process in place to do it. And then there's ways to get even more money out of your business. One of them is a ESOP program, which is employee stock purchasing program, where actually employees will purchase the company from you. And then it happens over a period of time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good to do that even if you don't sell the company, because you're pretty much letting the employees know that, hey, you got a piece of the action now. They don't have to see the books or anything, but, you know, there is going to be the pass-through that goes to them, and they can, you know, either buy more of the stock from you, or they can, you know, get something. But it changes the whole outlook of a company if they know that everyone in there has some type of skin in the game. And I've seen companies go from, you know, just robotic, doing what the boss says, to, hey, why are we doing it this way? Because this is losing us money. Some simple thing, like in the back of your auto shop, you know, you might realize, hey, we're doing this, and it's a lot of these things are getting thrown away, and they're worth money or something.
Right.
So different ways to do that, but that's an ESOP. There's also private equity money out there. If you have a bigger company, it doesn't work well for smaller companies. But basically, there's money out there to come in and look at you and maybe buy you out too.
And you have a list of people that?
So that's kind of like an MLS listing that once you get your numbers final and you categorize what you do for a business, what your values are, because a lot of times they like to match up owners on like the same kind of values. And but basically then it goes on like almost like an MLS listing.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets shot out around the country. So someone in Florida might be like, oh, you know, Russ is looking to sell his auto shop, and here's his data. Usually when they do that, there's, you know, non-disclosures right away.
Right.
So you don't even know the numbers. You just know auto shop for sale in Yuma, been around for 20 years, whatever.
Somebody may be looking to move here or something.
Yeah, and then you do the non-disclosure, and then the numbers get revealed. But basically, there's a database that will look beyond Yuma. Huh. So, and that's probably where you might get the best deal, right? Because, you know, possibly. Yuma people are like, you know, if you're a competitor in Yuma, is like, probably not feeling the best about you anyways if you're a competitor. They're probably like, his business isn't worth X, you know? So, or the opposite. Maybe there's a competitor that you want to take out to try to make the business that much better in Yuma. But so, yeah, there's a complete system in place to do that.
So you don't know them all. You just know you put them on these listings. Okay.
Yeah, they don't say companies' names. They just say, you know, auto shop, Yuma, Arizona, maybe price range or something like that. And then other people can inquire and do that.
Right.
But believe it or not, there's equity funds and even business owners that they make their whole life by buying small businesses, continuing to let them run kind of as is, but basically being, you know, they might make some tweaks here and there and maybe try to make it better. But, I mean, that's what they do. They buy small businesses all over. And those are the guys that, you know, probably drive, you know, have a jet or, you know, those guys probably do pretty well if you own 20, 30 businesses.
Right.
Anyways.
One thing, Tom, that's interesting that I think about is, depending on the business, is it more difficult to evaluate certain businesses than others? Like, let's say, for example, Russ's business. You can count his inventory. You can count, you know, pretty much what his sales are going to be. But say, for example, compared to an insurance agency, their inventory is really just copiers and fax machines, and then, of course, their human capital. But then all their usually sales are like how much they're going to be bringing in, and then there's also ongoing renewals of insurance. So how do you kind of evaluate different businesses like that?
So these software programs will put you in a category of what kind of business you're in.
Okay.
So they won't compare an insurance company to a auto shop.
Yeah.
But once you know what the average and this is all public record, because every time a business gets sold, the data does get posted, I mean, and they use it as a database.
Huh.
But basically, you know, if the average auto shop sells for, you know, three times your EBITDA, but if you're on the good side, you can sell for six, and the bad side, you know, maybe you sell for one.
Okay.
So basically, you can look at it for your industry, correct?
Okay, yeah, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then this biz equity thing where we get 3 years of tax returns just for the business, and we plug it in. On your tax return, there's a number that shows you what industry you're in.
Hmm.
So that automatically shows you're filing taxes as an auto shop or whatever you're doing. So it will take that in consideration.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, a lot of business owners, their equity or their net worth, a lot of it is in their business.
Yep.
I always try to tell business owners to try to take some equity out of the business and try to do other things with your
diversify,
equity.
Yeah.
Diversify. And the reason why I say that is I remember, you know, actually this is my 2024, and I got in the business in 1994. So this is my 30th year kind of in the business. Yeah. And you see a lot of things. But one of the things I've seen was in Yuma, there was a local office supply, you know, paper and stuff offices will buy from.
Yeah.
And you know, he had a great business, had a nice building, everything looked great. And, you know, always drove around in a nice fancy car. And, you know, this guy, but he plowed everything back into the business. I mean, that was his thing, and it worked well for a long time. Well, guess what? Staples moved into Yuma, and within, you know, 2 years, you can see the guy was in a different mindset. And within 5 years, he was out of business.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, if you can, you know, either do retirement plans, even maybe own a building, that would help, or do some rentals, properties. But try to pull some money out of the business so that you're not putting all your eggs into one basket.
Yeah.
But more importantly, you know, there probably was a point in Yuma where he was the top office supply person, hands down. So there would have been an optimum point to sell that business, because his numbers would have looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, for whatever reason, you know, wait too long, and now your numbers go backwards.
Yeah.
So, but we're going to take another break here. This is Money Talk, 5:06 a.m.
Sure to listen to 560 KBLU every Friday morning from 8 till 9 a.m. for Money Talk, bringing you the latest information and changes in the world of finance and mortgages. Brought to you by the partnership of Derek Eggerberg with Guild Mortgage and Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
This is Derek Eggerberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
Listen Friday morning from 8 to 9 for Money Talk, partnerships of Academy Mortgage and Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. Tom Rush here, George Davis. George must have taken a big high finance call because he grabbed his phone and ran outside.
Somebody important, man.
Probably his wife. I don't hear any screaming. But so anyways, we're talking about a certified exit planner advisor, which is a role I've taken on and designation I've taken on the last almost 3 years. And what we're doing is we're working with business owners on how to figure out how to maximize their valuation of their business and do a sell or just maximize it and keep it if that is the end result. So, you know, this process doesn't have to be a sell process. But there are, you know, different ways to sell a business. One of the ways I've came across before was to sell to the father-son. So father, father started the business and then the son's kind of in it and taking it over. So this situation was pretty interesting. You never know the dynamics of any family. But father wanted X for the business, and the son basically thought it was too much. But
it's got to be negotiated. It's a sale. It's family, but it's a sale.
Yeah, yeah. But to some degree, too, from a son's standpoint or even a business owner's standpoint, if I told you my business is worth $1 million compared to $500,000, like the bottom line is, like, where do you get that data from? I mean, it could be with $2 million. I mean, just throw a number out, right? So what we did is we evaluated the business, and it turned out the father was more in line with what it was worth. But the fact that we were able to show the son through this report what it was worth, the son kind of fell in line, and it was a good success story.
Oh, good.
So, but it could have been the other way. If the father was not gouging the son, but, you know, wanted a lot more than what it was worth, we would have at least showed it to him, and they probably would have adjusted some numbers. So this process can be used, you know, different ways to skin a cat. No one person is the same, especially with a business.
You ever run into some, like, a father-son situation, but the other way around, where the father's maybe being too generous and just saying, you know what, I'm just going to give the business to my son over so much time, or, you know, only charge him this much to get into it, and it's way undervaluing it, or...
Yeah, no, I mean, that happens probably more than the other way around. But for that to happen, it means that the the parent or the father must be financially in a good position.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's a big factor. Now, one of the things about exit planning for business owners, not only do you want to assess your business, because that's, you know, getting look at the numbers, you also want to assess your personal life. And your personal life is also the dynamics of your family. Mm. Because there are things that are causing you to either want to sell the business or keep the business. And a lot of times, you know, it involves other people in your family, whether it's spouse. I had a client who had a minor stroke, was about 10 years older than the wife, and they were financially in a good shape. Husband wanted to continue to work, and the wife is like, you know what? I'm 10 years younger than him. I don't know how much time he has. So her motivation was, you know, let's sell this business and let's check off some of these bucket list things we want to do,
travel
and do whatever. And it even came to the point where she was like, you know, I'm because she was involved in the business as a kind of a on the sales side and the record keeping side, bookkeeping. But she even came to the point where, well, I'm just going to quit the business and you run it. Like, I'm done. That was where they got to. It was like, you know, hitting heads. And basically with an exit plan, we said, okay, look, hang on for 18 more months because this is how long it's going to take for us to evaluate this and get the numbers. But at that point, there will be a sell event. And then the husband, you'd promise to sell. And he's like, oh, okay. So basically she hung on. The business was more in tune with her on board because she was doing a lot of the work and had a lot of the numbers. And then there was an exit strategy and it agreed on both of them. So you want to look at the family dynamics, and believe me, that can stop things in the water instantly.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You also want to look at, besides the family dynamics, is the financial planning or the financial strength of the family. Because ultimately, if you do a financial plan on a business owner and they say, you know what, for me to live the lifestyle I want, assuming they live to X amount of age, like I need to have $3 million. Everyone has that number of what they need. Now, they can kind of come back and say, okay, well, if I don't travel that much, maybe I could get less. But the bottom line is there's a number you need. So if you're trying to sell a business for $2 million, but the number they need is $3 million to kind of live that lifestyle, then that could come back and bite them. So if people don't know what their number is and what they need, you know, not only from the business but from their other assets, then it's really not – it's like selling something when you don't even know what you need to get out of it. You're just selling it to sell it.
Right.
And if there's taxes and things. Mm-hmm. So you need to do the financial planning of the business owner. And then the third thing you need to do is evaluate the company.
Family
and
dynamics.
And those three things have to all go in motion, because it doesn't help just to get the business information. You know, if you sell the business, if it's a price they want, but then you look at their personal financials and it's not enough to maintain whatever lifestyle they want. And that's something that to do this, we require all three of those, because the second you leave out one of them, it will derail it down the road. Sometimes if the family dynamics aren't revealed and not talked about, then down the road that will cause usually something to happen where it doesn't get evaluated correctly. Or now we do financial planning as a firm ourselves. So to me, that's not a huge component, because that's what we do day in, day out. But the business side component is really the value of a advisor, certified exit planner advisor.
And the family dynamics, too, can get a little sticky, too, I would think.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is, the CPA is a big part of this, because they know the numbers. Sometimes as an attorney
trust
involved,
attorney,
if someone's, you know. But what's interesting thing about I notice about CPAs is they've been clients for a long time, and a lot of CPAs are kind of net neutral, like meaning like the last thing you want to do is get in family dynamics, because that's not their personality a lot of the times, and they want to continue to do the bookkeeping, and they don't want to like necessarily make anyone mad. So sometimes it takes someone who's a good communicator to, you know, get in, and you take the chance you might make someone, you know, mad, but it's part of the business, but get in there and communicate about what the real issues are.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having a seminar actually tomorrow, 10 to 11 a.m. at our office, Human Investment Group. Then we'll have another one Tuesday at 6 p.m. to 7 p.m., which is an exit planning seminar. This is geared towards business owners. There's no cost or anything. It's in our conference room. I don't know, it sits about 12 people. But if you have an interest in this, you can call our office, 928-329-1700, and RSVP so we can get a head count. But it should be very informative. It should open some eyes on what someone has to do to get their business to the point where, you know, they can get the most out of it when they sell it. Or they might realize once they get the most out of it that they want to keep it for a while because the numbers are better. You know, if you can get your profits up, then it makes it a little easier to keep things.
So what type of listener or person would be interested in this seminar, Tom? Like you said, the wheelhouse. Let's say I'm thinking of I don't necessarily know if I want to sell my business, but I'm still going to learn something and get educated by coming to this. Or maybe it's 4 or 5 years down the road or 1 to 2 years, like you're talking about.
Or even 15 years down the road, because when you're not exposed to a process and a lot of people don't have a clue on how to sell their business.
And their evaluations.
Then this is something you can learn and put in your back pocket for a long time.
Yeah.
So I say it's really for any business owner that thinks at some point they're going to not own their business.
And just listening to you, there's also strategies that you can do to improve your business and improve the, what your bottom line is.
So here's an interesting fact. If you took the top 100 businesses in 1900, so this is a long time ago, right? 124 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You took the top 100 businesses in the United States. Guess how many of them are still around today?
2.
8.
7.
Oh.
So what this basically tells people is businesses are either going to eventually go out of business and no longer be existent, or they're going to be absorbed by someone else.
Yeah, they get gobbled up.
So, you know, and it's very unusual for, a first generation to pass on to the second generation. That number is only like 25% will be passed on.
Uh-huh.
And then to the third generation to keep it going goes down to like 8%. So, hate to say this, but being a realist and being a business owner, it's hard to keep, multi-generation businesses going. So, you, some degree, you got to face the music and realize that at some point it's going to probably be sold.
It's interesting to see which 7 of those are. I know, I bet you one was Sears.
Well, and I think GE was on there.
Yeah, I would think GE.
Yeah, but Sears went bankrupt, right?
Yeah. So I'm sure that's one of the ones that was out.
Yeah, so.
Back then.
Woolworth, that one.
Nordstrom's was 1901.
I don't know if that got gobbled up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, the point being is if you think your business is going to live forever, it's not.
No.
Mm-hmm. And if you're lucky, you might live for a couple generations, but something to think about. Now, here's some of the we're going to take another break here. When we get back, I'll go over some of the questions or ideas that business owners are going to think about. Be right back. Money Talk, 5, 6 a.m.
Be sure to listen to 560 KBLU every Friday morning from 8 till 9 a.m. for Money Talk, bringing you the latest information and changes in the world of finance and mortgages. Brought to you by the partnership of Derek Egeberg with Guild Mortgage and Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
This is Derek Egeberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
.com
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. We're here talking about exit planning for business owners. At what point does it make sense to exit your business plan, either by passing on to the next generation, selling it to a private person, selling it to a private equity company, selling it to a person who owns a bunch of businesses and that's what they do, or the last one is an ESOP, which is you're selling it back to your employees. Okay. So many different ways to do this. So some of the things when you talk to a business owner, you want to find out is if there's a key person involved, because ultimately when you work with businesses, human capital is a factor that needs to be built in. And if you have minimal to no to human capital or they leave, if you sell, that's going to really affect the business. And if there's a key employee who runs a business, helps you run the business, and everyone has them, I don't care what business you're in. So it's important to talk about that and figure out, you know, how that's going to continue on, if it's going to continue on. You know, most business owners want their people to be taken care of, so they prefer to keep them all on and continue to work. So you can talk about
that. They want their clients to be taken care of.
Yeah, and then you can talk about that. You can also talk about if there's another family member that's going to take over the business, because that's everyone's intention. I mean, that's kind of the goal. But then you talk to the kids, and they don't want anything to do with the business. But that's the dad's goal, mom's goal. So, it's, you know, that's what I'm talking about, the family dynamic thing. Then sometimes, too, when you if you sell your business, sometimes there's a reason why you want to stay on for, you know, 3 years, 5 years. Sometimes that's a request by the person buying it, so you can kind of, you know, continue on with the business and eventually get out of it. Or sometimes a business owner wants to stay on for whatever reason. So that's a discussion to have of who's going to be the key players on. And usually, you know, the business owner knows kind of where the dead bodies are buried and kind of where the hard, you know, what's wrong, what's right. So there is usually a transition period where, you know, someone's going to stay on for at least 6 months or something, or at least be consulting. So questions out there. One of the big things, too, is when you evaluate a company, you know, you have to usually pay a company to be valued on how much you're worth. So you have to figure out what's the best company to get a evaluation from, whether it's cost effective or one that's competent. Actually, the smaller business you are, you're not going to spend too much money on an evaluation. But, you know, bigger one you are, you can spend more. So that's something that you got to consider.
What's the cost of, like, for example, the simple one, like a biz equity or something? Does that cost much, or do you know?
Well, I mean, in a nutshell, we do it for our clients for free because it's a subscription that I subscribe to, and it's not cheap. But if anyone, you know, wanted to come in and do it, you know, we'd probably charge $500.
Okay.
To get, you know, 3 years of tax returns.
At least to get a general idea.
That's just an idea.
In the ballpark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Then also when you sell a business, you got to figure out, you know, what assets are you keeping and not keeping? Are you keeping the building? Because a lot of times a business owner owns a building. Are you keeping some of the equipment? You know, so there's things to be thought about and looked at.
Or some scenarios, Tom, where maybe the business owner will keep the real estate portion of it, and then their son or family will take over the business operations, but then they'll still get you know, payments from the rent.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a win.
Yeah.
Now, you also got to find out with businesses if there's any potential liabilities that are pending. For example, lawsuits, disputes, to the IRS audits, you know, if there's any you know, insurance claims or anything that's kind of lingering out there.
Any bodies buried somewhere?
Yeah, because ultimately, you know, it's nice to buy a business, but if you don't understand, you know, what problems are already in store with it, and that would probably make the value go down some if you're in five different lawsuits with big numbers on it.
It's going to make a difference.
Yeah. And those are things that there's a packet where you kind of go through and it thinks about all the different scenarios of, you know, yes, no, and it's a process, like I said, and it's a process that's really been thought out and looked at. So much easier to not reinvent the wheel and, you know, come up with something that makes sense. So really that's a triggering event where you would get an evaluation on your business. So that's like the first step. Second step, we call it 90-day sprints. So really what we're trying to do is get the evaluation higher, which means you got to get your metrics higher. And sometimes it's 90 days, and then it's another 90 days. So it's up to the business owner on how quick they can get the metrics up. But then once the metrics get to the point where we think that good for both sides, then that's when you can take it out and start to market it to other businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like the examples you gave at the beginning, but because when I think of this, what if I'm on the side where I want to purchase a business? I'm not the business owner, but I'm thinking about buying a business. You've had people approach you and say, hey, what do you think about this price that this guy's asking? That's another flip side of it, right? To get an input from if I wanted to go buy a business.
Yeah. And that was a guy, I give the example of, you know, the competitor wanted to sell his business for $250,000. And after doing the biz equity report, it was worth about a million for the
purchaser. Yep. Okay.
And then there's also dynamics, you know, how many business owners are there? Are they two? Are they from one family? Is it husband and wife?
How much control and interest do they have?
Yeah. And then also, what does each business owner want out of it? Because sometimes you get two different stories where, not that there's disputes, but, you know, business owners do have sometimes a little bit of dispute going on.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to kind of get everyone on the same page. And then there's also some tax evaluation on how to get out of it without paying income tax, try to pay capital gains tax. That's always better. And, you know, work with the CPA on how to stretch it out and what time frame to keep the taxes down.
Yeah.
So it's a whole process. And a lot of times, too, when you sell a business, those business brokers out there, kind of like when you sell real estate, so they take, you know, depends on what you negotiate, but usually it's about 8 to 10% of what they're selling.
Oh.
So if you sold like $1 million business and it was done by a broker, they would probably get about $80,000 commission, give or take,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like a lot. But a lot of times these deals take, you know, 18 months, 2 years. Like, these things don't happen overnight. And also, if you can get your numbers up, so instead of selling for $1 million, you can sell for, you know, 1.5, 1.7, you know, then it behooves you to pay people to get your numbers up, because you're going to make it back.
Return
on
investment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
is there a lot of, not a lot, but you probably come across some business owners that don't necessarily want to give up that controlling interest at first. So let's say they want to retain 50% or more of the business for the first 5 years, because they still want to be able to make the decisions, and maybe they're having a hard time, you know, letting go of that. So there's different strategies where they can just kind of do a small amount at first until they decide.
So usually if the business owner knows who's going to be buying them out, meaning it's another employee
or family member,
it's a guy down the street, someone with a little bit of trust involved, like, that could probably happen. But if you're selling out to someone who absolutely doesn't know who you are, you know, they usually want the control on the business.
That's true.
So they might take 51%, let you keep 49%, but there's a control issue, right?
Sure.
Who's going to run the business? Who's in charge? Anyways, we're wrapping this thing up, but we got a seminar tomorrow from 10 to 11 a.m. at Yuma Investment Group. We're at 182 East 16th Street, right next to Smart and Final. We got another one from 6 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday. Any business owners out there that will sell or think of selling, please come to this. It's right up your alley. It's educational. It should be add some good insight on what things need to be looked at. This is Money Talk 560 AM. Everybody have a great weekend.
Stay safe. Have a great weekend, Yuma.
Talked with Tom Rush and George Davis Wealth are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Guests on Money Talk are not affiliated with CWM LLC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.